This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, I am, first host, but also realtors with Oakwyn Realty in downtown Vancouver. Fired up for today because today is, we're going prime time. We've got Todd Talbot, celebrity realtor, former host of Love It or List It Vancouver. And he wears a lot of hats in real estate.
He does. He's been on the show a bunch of times. I actually went back and looked. This is his fifth time on the show. And the reason I was looking was because he was on the show talking about his A-Frame project and the docu-series that he was filming a while back. And he's back kind of talking about that today. And I wanted to go back and look. And it was almost 3 years ago that he was on the show, if you can believe it.
Wow. That's wild.
2022, in the spring of 2022. So just to put it into context, he was on the show talking about building net zero passive house in the Okanagan. And he was up to his elbows in it when he was last on the show, dealing with permits and all the rest, all the headaches of a major build using new technology. And as a lot of people probably know, the wildfires that ripped through West Kelowna last year, Todd's A-frame was right in the line and it burned to the ground, which is the ending of this new docuseries that ends, that airs on Cottage Life very soon. So he's on talking about that, as well as the Vancouver real estate market, of course, because we always like to hear his thoughts.
Yeah. And I mean, we cover obviously the story of building A-frame. We kind of cover his philosophy on not only real estate investing, but just real estate in general. And the way he thinks about real estate now has kind of evolved. I feel like it's evolved over time. And you'll notice that when you look at the trajectory of him being on our show. But specifically now, it's like he really, in my opinion, I don't know if he'd frame it this way, but he's got like a through line in his real estate philosophy that is tied to, I think, positive change in the world, positive change around him. And it's actually, it reaffirms what we already know about Todd's moral compass, but also it's like, it's just a very interesting take on real estate and just how powerful real estate is.
I would say it's one of the more, his take is definitely one of the more unique ones we've had on the show over the course of the last decade. The other thing that was kind of interesting was, and I tried to say this during the interview, but not very eloquently, and I don't think I'll do a better job now, but when he talks about vibe, the vibes in the city, I do think he's able to pick up on kind of those subtle changes and that everybody might be, or a lot of people are feeling. I'm certainly feeling them. I think you are as well. But he actually can kind of give voice to those, to the vibe in the air. So stay tuned for that. Interesting take on where we're at in the city's trajectory.
Yeah, not just a pretty face, that Todd Talbot.
No, absolutely not. So stay tuned for that. But what do we have before we cut to our talk with Todd album?
Before we get to that, Matt, of course, we have the MLA Newswire Weekly. This is a pre-sale update brought to you by the MLA Canada Advisory Team. This is a new headline this week. Matt, what does the headline say?
The headline this week is BC government makes entering housing market easier for primary residents.
Yeah, so the BC NDP have proposed a plan for first-time homebuyers offering to finance 40% of the purchase price for new homes in designated developments. This basically means that buyers only need to cover 60% of the home's price, making down payments and monthly mortgage payments more affordable.
So the government loan would be repaid when the home is sold, which yes. makes sense, or after 25 years, including 40% of any appreciation in the home's value. Here's a question for you, Adam. Now, I guess if this was your only option for home ownership, this seems like a good deal. Would you take giving up 40% of appreciation in your home over 25 years for a loan?
I think I would.
Well, in order to get into the market, of course.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, if it's the difference between getting in the market and not getting into the market. Because I think I always go back to this study that was done. And I mean, everybody says this on our show, but Canadians at the end of the day buy real estate for stability.
Right. Right.
You know? And I think this is like, so I mean, whether or not you believe with this model of the government co-owning real estate with people, you know, whether you agree with that or not, I think it would be hard not to take the government up on that if you were having challenges getting into the market yourself.
Yeah, it's funny how so many people have come on the show lamenting the erosion of property rights in the province of BC. And now literally you have the potential to co-own a property with the provincial government. This initiative could make it easier for middle-income families to enter the housing market, though, of course, particularly in high-demand areas. The plan could establish a new floor for home prices, yeah. which may affect overall real estate affordability in the long term. That's kind of interesting, right?
Yeah. And here's the catch, Matt. David Eby gets to crash on your couch whenever he wants. That's the If you like that headline and you want to hear more of that, subscribe to the MLA Newswire, a daily email roundup of the latest real estate news and market insights. Visit MLAcanada.com. And Matt, what else we got before? We, of course, this show is always sponsored by our real estate team, which is Scalina Real Estate, our company in Vancouver. We've got a fantastic new listing. I'm so fired up about this
new listing.
2608-108 West Cordova. This is the Woodward's building. Okay, here's what I was thinking. I was thinking about Woodward's driving over right now, specifically 2608, because this is a high floor unit. You've got tremendous outdoor space.
Some would call it a sky home.
You called it a sky home. I agree. But here's the thing. This is the view. Five Flags, water, Harbor Center, North Shore Mountains. An incredible city view. Good size outdoor space. You know, you've got a really generous sized one bedroom. $579,900 is the list. Under 600K for views and a proper one bed. And this is, I mean, the finishes are amazing as well.
It checks all the boxes. Think about the bathroom alone. You know, we always talk about spa-like baths. This is legitimately a spa-like bath.
Well, what are you saying about our other spa-like baths?
Stand-up shower, floating vanity. I mean, it's an amazing space. Yeah. Perfect plan. I love this unit.
Yeah, yeah,
and
I know.
Price.
I feel like they
can I
they
talk,
nailed
can we
it
talk
with,
about the price?
Yeah, we talked about the price. $579,900, which I'm, you know, and I mean 580 square feet, which is great. So I mean, I look at this and I think also just the aesthetic. I feel like that building nailed the aesthetic in terms of the bamboo floors, the concrete ceilings, this kitchen and this is my favorite floor plan for the one beds at Woodward's. And there's always, I mean, Woodward's is such, both buildings are so interesting looking that there's always some floor plans that have to be kind of sacrificed for the exterior aesthetic, right? But this floor plan is truly flawless. So if you want to learn more about that listing, you can check it out at Vancouver Real Estate Podcast, where we feature all of our listings, all of our active listings. And Matt, while you're there, grab a copy of the Soul Plan.
That's right, Adam. VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Check out the iconic Woodward's building, but also click Sell With Us, where you can download the Soul Plan immediately. And Adam, of course, it stands for Start on Launch Date, but what does that actually mean?
Yeah, Matt, this is a step-by-step guide for getting top dollar in the shortest amount of time to get your home sold. And this is based on over 15 years of selling real estate in this market, selling hundreds of homes. There are systems that work to get top dollar, and we lay them out pretty explicitly in this guide. And it's free and it's evergreen, whether you're thinking about selling this year or whether you're thinking about selling in the future. It's something you should have on file. But Matt, I love this episode with Todd. I can't wait to listen to it. So why don't we cut to our interview with Todd Talbot?
Enjoy.
This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly four decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it also is making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
We want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Burquitlam's most important intersection, Como Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums, over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular with 80% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior one-bedroom all the way to three-bedroom homes remaining. Check out marcon.ca/elmwood for more.
And Matt, we are also excited about Soane House, Marcon's newest community in West Coquitlam, with 165 homes ranging from junior one beds to three beds. Soane House offers the perfect West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's S-O-E-N-H-A-U-S. Or you can learn more at marcon.ca or follow them at Instagram at Marcon Homes.
Marcon, building for life.
Okay, so we're here with Todd Talbot. He is former star of Love It or List It on HGTV. Definitely active in all facets of real estate. And now, super exciting, you've got a new project coming out with Cottage Life. But most importantly, past guest fan favorite. So Todd, maybe for some of our listeners that don't know you, there won't be many, but can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I think... You know, most people know me kind of in the real estate space when I hosted Love It or List It Vancouver for 10 seasons, 130 episodes. It kind of airs all over the world. It was this big hit that kind of went on and on and on, which was a wonderful experience. But it was definitely time to leave and kind of move on and explore not only some new territory, but also revisit some stuff that kind of got me interested in real estate in the first place. So getting back to kind of investing and the renovation and building side of things a little bit more. Because, you know, when you're on television, you actually don't get to practice the thing that you love to do and that you kind of got into the industry for. And, you know, to be fair, you know, I wore a realtor hat on that show, which was great. But it's, you know, it's definitely not the full picture of what I'm passionate about. And you know, I think we've talked in the past about passive house construction and kind of how we're building our homes, which really became very important to me kind of as the show, as I was deciding to kind of leave the show. Some of these elements started to play bigger into conversations that I wanted to have around how we were building in the city, how we're building outside of the city, kind of levels of construction. You started to see how construction was changing, especially in British Columbia, who is, you know, from a code perspective, is leading the rest of the country. And just got super obsessed with that, launched into building my first passive house up in the Okanagan. And so, you know, wearing long-winded way of saying, you know, I wear lots of different hats in kind of the real estate realm. And some of them have taken over more than others in the last couple of years.
Oh, Todd, I remember last time, was it last time? I don't know. I feel like we've had you on a bunch of times. You know, you've done the downsizing. Last time you literally brought us pencils, the A-frame pencils, I think, which is, you know, is like in thinking back is kind of the, I don't want to spoil the story, but it's kind of crazy. It's been a while since you've been on, but you're launching this documentary, I guess, about the A-frame. First of all, can you tell us what the title is? And second of all, can you tell us a little bit about the story and the story of the documentary?
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, the title of the documentary is short and sweet. It's Todd Talbot Builds the Passive House Project. So let's just break down kind of television super quick. Basically, we've got a bunch of shows that people like watching on HGTV and other networks that are focused around real estate, whether it's buying and selling or renovating or building or whatever it is. Most of those shows tend to be kind of lifestyle focused, loosely, shall we say, loose term reality television, where, you know, there's not a lot of reality in the reality. However, they're built for entertainment and they're really kind of structured to be repetitive. That's the business model, right? How many of these can we churn out week over week and that people know what they're coming for and they can kind of watch and enjoy it and have a laugh, et cetera. I did that for many years and it's fun, but it really serves a very particular purpose. So when I started building, so I'll bring you back to the beginning of the build. We bought this 2-acre property up in the Okanagan, right on the shores of Lake Okanagan. And Rebecca and I knew that we wanted to build something there. We wanted to challenge ourselves to build something that was environmentally conscious, as well as exploring new building techniques around making this home net zero, and eventually kind of got introduced to the Passive House principles. And so really embraced that, went down that path. We created this incredibly unique structure. Part of that was because I love to build and I love to build things that are interesting, but also because, well, so we had to kind of marry this structure with a high performance building model. You know, we went down the path of building that and we wanted to document that series. And so we worked with a production company that started filming with us from basically from day one. And so we filmed kind of B-roll footage for close to 4 years.
Sorry, Todd, you were going to live, were you going to move to the Okanagan or was it going to be like a summer home or what was the plan?
Yeah, so it kind of evolved over time. The original kind of purpose of this property was to create a place to get away four seasons, but, you know, not necessarily our principal residence at this point in our life. As you know, our kids are the same age. And so, you know, they're in high school right now. My daughter's in grade 10 and my son's in grade 8. And so we would stay in the city until, you know, they finished high school and kind of moved on. So we've got another 5 or 6 years. And it was always my vision that we would then kind of segue up into this property. It was far more robust of a build to just be a cottage. So to me, it was a place that we might spend more and more time over the years and ultimately, I don't know about the word retire, but, you know, have that be more of a home base. So it had this, you know, resilience, generational peace. It was always in the back of my mind that I wanted to do something. I called it my midlife crisis because I wanted it to be something that, you know, I really poured my heart and soul into. And I told my kids, you know, I want this place to be generational. I realized that they aren't necessarily going to hold on to it, but, you know, it would be generational for somebody. So I really wanted to experiment with all of these concepts and roll absolutely everything I could into this build. And that's what we did. And we filmed it for 4 years. We sold the show to Blue Ant and Cottage Life. And we had a kind of shock, dramatic ending. And we'll, you know, we can rip the Band-Aid off right now. We don't hide it in the documentary series. We actually acknowledge it up front. We lost the structure along with all of our neighbors in our bay. So, and along with 191 homes in total, were lost in the McDougal Creek wildfire in August of 2023. So last kind of summer-ish. So unfortunately, we have a very different ending to the series than we had, but we still go back to the beginning and showcase how we built it, why we chose the things that we did, introducing this idea of high performance, passive house construction, so that we could maybe crack through a little bit so that people understood it and weren't so maybe put off by the title or put off by not really understanding what it was, but trying to make it a little bit aspirational so that it was easy to understand and it was in an architecturally cool build so that, it, you know, passive house tends to have stigma attached to it. And anyways, you know, that's the premise of the show, is to follow the journey in a very authentic and real way. And, you know, that was the impetus to kind of get started with this build from on a personal level. And then we kind of married these two into a show.
And it was, so you were nearly done construction after 4 years. I feel like you, now that I'm thinking back to when you gave us those pencils, I think you were ripping out your hair at that point. Like you were in the midst of it and not that, you know, like, oh yeah, all these challenges and delays and things like that. Were you, was it near, when the yeah. fire happened, you were pretty close to the finish line?
Yeah, we'd brought up, the goal was to be in for Christmas. We'd already brought up our Christmas decorations. You know, we're just finishing drywall, but there wasn't a lot of drywall because most of it was exposed wood on the inside. I mean, we had a lot of components to kind of get us through to the finish line. And obviously there was a light at the end of the tunnel. So yeah, we were very close. And, but you're right. It was a, especially in constructing this show, it forces you to go back and relive the entire process through this video and interviews and going back and looking for content in your phone, et cetera. And you get reminded of, I mean, anyone who's been through a renovation knows that it can be a challenging journey. We added a few elements on top of that that made it extra challenging. And when we went back to put the show together, we realized, you know, there was in year one when we were building that we were on evacuation notice, and my good friend Patrick, who lived 20 minutes up the road, who was building with me, lost his house. Then we had the atmospheric river we were building during COVID. Then we had the heat dome where we had record-breaking temperatures never recorded in the Okanagan before. So we had all of these things kind of stacking up from a climate perspective that we were struggling through, not to mention the overly challenging architectural design that we were trying to pin this house to the side of the cliff. I mean, I shouldn't say trying to. We did actually pin it to the side of the cliff. yeah, so there was a lot going on. Your memory's correct.
Todd, how much in, like, I'm just thinking, we've had you on in around the notion of right-sizing. And we've, you know, we've talked about that over time. We've talked about, you know, passive house. And obviously this has to do with passive house. How much of your real estate kind of ethos, I guess, is informed by environmental challenges? Or how do those two kind of intersect?
Well, I'd say it's an ever-evolving conversation. You know, in my early days of renovating and investing, not much. I would say over the last 8 to 10 years, certain elements have kind of surfaced, different changes in our world where, you know, I don't think we can ignore, regardless of the political conversation as to, you know, how and why, I don't think there's any debate as to whether things have actually changed. All you have to do is kind of live through a summer or a winter in British Columbia or frankly, anywhere in this country. And you'll realize that, you know, our homes need to perform differently than they have needed to in the past. That heat dome I referenced, I think it's well reported that over 600 people died in their homes in Greater Vancouver because the spaces that they were living in aren't built to be resilient enough to keep us safe inside during extreme heat or extreme cold. And that's a problem. We would have been laughed at if we put air conditioning in a home 10, 15 years ago in Vancouver. It just wasn't a conversation that anyone had. And now I hear rumblings it's going to be code or some sort of, you know, cooling element. So these things evolve. And, you know, I've gotten really involved in this conversation. You know, I've put my money where my mouth is. We're currently doing a passive house retrofit on a 1940s bungalow in East Vancouver right now. So, you know, I'm all in on the idea that we need to push this conversation forward in terms of how we're building and how we just make our home safe and kind of climate proof moving forward.
You know, just going back to the documentary, Todd, one thing that strikes me, and we haven't seen it, we didn't get the copy, the advanced copy, but like it strikes me as like a perfect almost like wrapped in a bow. Like, and I don't mean to downplay the kind of tragedy of it, but if you wanted to have all the elements of the housing in relation to the environment, like this is, you know, the challenges to build a passive house just from a, okay, what are we doing? You have all the government, the code and the regulatory headaches that you went through. And then it ends in, you know, a climate change created fire that destroys the whole thing in the end. Can you talk a little bit about like, is that the story of the, I mean, clearly it's a story, but is that kind of the thrust of the documentary? Like what is the big takeaway that you were going for when you had to shift gears, I guess?
Well, I think you nailed it, is the fact that the fire happens at the very end of this changes the tone of the show for sure. And it puts an exclamation mark. It kind of, you know, it solidifies the concept or the theory that we had started with, because obviously I didn't know that that was going to happen. And it's a tougher sell to people to say, hey, listen, this, we're trying to do something looking forward. We're trying to look down the line a little bit and create something that's going to be resilient moving forward. And so the fact that the fire happened, I think, makes it that much more relevant to conversation. So it's the fire is infused into the documentary series. Obviously, we deal with it. It's 8 parts. We deal with it in episode 7 and 8 heavily. And we acknowledge it right off the top in episode 1. And then we go back to the beginning and we really just follow the puck. We go through the process. And it's quite shocking how many times I'm interviewed along the way and say, this is what we're doing to protect this house against fire. And if fire were to ever happen, you know, it's like it was somewhere in the back of my mind. It wasn't something that I ever thought was going to actually necessarily happen. Like, you don't really think that part of it through. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I'm hoping that the biggest takeaway, other than, you know, watching this family go through this journey and maybe learning something about passive house construction and watching the journey, is that, you know, this is a conversation that we maybe need to move a little bit forward up the chain, so that we're acknowledging it in the way that we are constructing our homes. And that doesn't just mean in a rural setting. I think we need to acknowledge it in the urban setting too. Smoke particulate in the air, just to take one example, take the heat out of the question. I mean, how do people filter the air inside their home so that the air that they're breathing is healthy? And the smoke from forest fires are, you know, leave no one behind. You know, they float around the world, and so everyone, it needs to pay attention to those types of things as well. So, you know, it really all gets kind of tied together in this series. And, you know, we don't end with any grand statement of like, well, this is what we should do. Or, you know, there's definitely questions posed and we're left as a family and as a community, you know, asking basic questions like, should we rebuild? And if we do, what more elements can we integrate into the construction process? Yeah, it's tricky. There's no clear-cut answers.
Todd, I was actually just listening to a podcast discussing AI and how over the next decade or so, we're going to see a proliferation of new materials, and the periodic table is going to grow substantially. And one of the things related to it was this idea of new building materials and new materials that we've never conceived of assisting in climate change. And I'm just curious, like, when you think about what you could have done different or the potential of rebuilding, like, are you, like, for the region, like, can we kind of build our way out of this in your mind? Or do you think there's better measures we can take? Because it seems to me like the Okanagan, when there's a fire, it's a, short of all the, you know, the brave people that are fighting the fire, it's very challenging for these communities to do anything to prevent destruction, right?
So the fire chief of West Kelowna, who's an awesome guy, as a side note, was flown out to the UN in New York to speak to the UN right after this fire. And if anyone's interested, they should Google West Kelowna fire chief speaks at the UN. I think it's on CBC or anyways, it's out there on YouTube. And he does a great job of articulating where our priorities need to shift in terms of our resources. So one way to answer your question is that currently we design our system to be much more reactive. So fire's coming. We spend a lot of money and resources, people, et cetera, to try and fight this fire. He makes the argument that, you know, we could take less resources and move them up front before the fire and start to address how we're building some fire smart technologies around home construction, but also just around our communities and how things are set up in general. So I think that there's a conversation to be had. And there, I am aware of initiatives on the federal government level, provincial, and also in industry with folks like Rockwool and Hardy, some non-combustible building materials who are getting together with government to talk about code requirements moving forward, which we do not have. Well, there's none that I'm aware of currently in terms of where we're allowed to build, you know, what you're allowed to build with, et cetera. But I think that that's coming as well. There's also an insurance piece that plays into this that I think, you know, everyone should be cognizant of in that, you know, insurance, the underwriters of insurance are pooling money globally. So whether a catastrophic event happens in Europe or in North America or in South America, it all kind of has a ripple effect to affect us all. It's not about just your personal premium going up. But we're going to have to figure that piece out as well, because people are going to still need insurance. These costs are going to start rising. They're going to be spread over. And we're going to have to address, you know, should things be built in those areas, which was your original question. And I think I heard the fire chief also speak about, you know, we build our communities in the line of nature and in the line of fire. And so while these, some of these elements are natural and need to be looked at that way, we also need to acknowledge that when we plunk down our communities, our cities, our towns, our houses, whatever, we're kind of imposing our built environment into that. And I'm not sure we have done a fantastic job of that. Even if we look at North Vancouver, I mean, we are built on the side of a mountain with a massive forest backing right onto a whole bunch of homes. And to think that there's not going to be some sort of challenging situation around fire even there, and that's right in our city. So I think you're going to see these conversations arise more and more. And I do think that building materials are changing how we are paying attention to fire is getting much more important to people. And as a side note, you know, we haven't even aired this series, but the network has been lovely enough to offer, shall we say, season two, which would be focused around the rebuild. And seems logical on a certain level. You know, it really opens up a whole lot of questions of, okay, but in real life, beyond kind of the fun of shooting another series around it, you know, talking to your kids about how they think, like, is that even a smart idea, et cetera. So, you know, everyone's got an opinion. I get opinions from people. You probably have opinions too. I get personal, close friends, family, whatever, on both ends of the spectrum. One will say, you're an idiot if you build there again. And then others go, you know, you got to rise from the ashes, you know, overcome. This is going to be great, blah, blah, blah. So
I feel like the second one is definitely like an exciting narrative for a show, right? Like you can't hold Todd down, but
yeah, of course.
But yeah, are you going to rebuild? Have you got to that? Have you?
Well, we've gently explored some different options around it. What I do know is I can't rebuild the same thing that I did before. It's just, first of all, from an insurance perspective, Financially, we're just really not in the same position that we were when we started this whole thing. I mean, that's a whole nother conversation. And, you know, we can save that one for another day. I do think, as boring and as eye-rolly as insurance is, it's something that I ignored as a, you know, someone in real estate. Ironically enough, you know, reading the small print around those things is not fun. I don't know very many people who do it. I own multiple properties. I've had multiple insurance properties or policies for years. And this one has really come back to bite me in the ass for a number of reasons. So we can't do the same thing again.
Can you actually get insurance in that? Like, is that a challenge?
I believe you still can get insurance there. It's obviously something that we need to have in writing before we go down that path. But there are places that you simply cannot get insurance for yet or again. So it's definitely a big piece of the puzzle. Time is the other element that I think is one of those things that's not as super fun to talk about. But, you know, I spent the better part of 3 years of my life, I put almost everything else on hold, including my family, to build this. And that takes a toll. And so to do it in that style again, very hands-on, I can't do that again. So one of the things that I'm excited about in the building industry is this conversation around prefabrication, modular, panelized, all of these elements, which of course we're seeing more and more of everywhere, is such a logical next step in the evolution of how we're building. And so I've been in conversation with some super inspiring people in the province who are kind of leading the charge in this realm. And so we're looking at working together to come up with something that I think would be new, again, kind of pushing the boundaries, still incorporating passive house construction, and even more resilience, like really leaning into that piece and becoming more educated around how to build these, but then looking at craning something in so that the speed of construction is a bigger piece of the puzzle.
Hey, everyone. Pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
This podcast is sponsored by Common Ground Consulting. Are you developing in the Lower Mainland? Common Ground Consulting is a development management and consulting company with experience in single family, townhouses, multifamily, and commercial developments.
What I love about Common Ground, Adam, is they manage the whole development process, from due diligence and feasibility reports for initial purchase of land to completing rezoning, development permits, and building permits.
They streamline the whole process with strong relationships with sub-consultants and municipalities and a deep understanding of all city requirements.
Common Ground Consulting. Feasibility and efficiency prioritized every step of the way.
Learn more at commonground-consulting.com or 604-807-6419.
We are also sponsored by Oakwin Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakwin, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakwin.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.
What do you think is, because I mean, I feel like at the Home and Garden Show, like for years now, there's been amazing prefab builders, people working on these projects, but I feel like the market hasn't quite accepted it yet in a way that you would have thought even 5 years ago. What do you think's holding back prefab, like in most cities or in most regions?
I think it's a slightly complicated answer. I think that there's a couple of elements at play. Number one is that when it comes to single family detached homes, everyone is particular. And so prefabrication, to a certain extent, requires some sort of systemized method, right? So let's say, you know, you're designing your house. Both of you basically have a 33 by 122 lot. Well, you're going to come up with a very, very different plan. And you're going to want you know, a little extra square footage for a walk-in closet, but you're not so interested in that. So all of these minor details make it challenging for people to systematize production when it comes to a modular component. That's not the only model. So I think that that's one challenge when it comes to the home that you live in the urban environment. Secondly, there is this preconceived notion around the word modular. So it has this kind of cheaper connotation to it, maybe even so far as like kind of that trailer park kind of vibe. And the irony of it is that most of these prefabricated models that I have toured and I've looked at a lot are built so much better than the condo that you're living in, the townhouse, the detached home. Like, they're spectacular. And so those are a couple factors. Then, of course, there is moving these things around. So if you're looking at modular, you can look at components that can fit together. So you can bring different pieces on trucks that have certain height restrictions and width restrictions to travel the highways. And these are logistical challenges that the builders are working desperately to figure out. And they're changing all the time. Like, an offering from someone like Hewinghouse 3 years ago as opposed to now is completely different because they've learned as they've gone down this path, or Backcountry Hut Company, or Kolesnikov up in Castlegar is branching into this as well. They're opening another 100,000 square foot manufacturing plant for prefabricated, all automated. Like, the stuff that's going on that people don't know about is unbelievable. It's world class. And so I do think it is just a lack of exposure and education for people to kind of go, that's what I want. And then on the logistical side, it's the industry itself figuring out, okay, well, how do we do this effectively that makes sense from a business perspective? So I think both of those things are happening at the same time, but it is so close. And some of the models are already there, but it's so close to, I think, really tipping, to steal Malcolm Gladwell's term.
You know, it's kind of interesting because I had a question that I was trying to think of how to frame. But, you know, the A-frame, when you built it, like, you took 3 years out of your life. You know, you love to be on the tools. You're passionate about these ideas. But that's pretty specific to you, right? A, that you have the time, the wherewithal to do it, the knowledge, all those kind of things. Like, I actually had, like, how realistic are, you know, is a project like this for an everyday Canadian? But it does seem like maybe that's the answer, right? That this a modular component.
Well, there's two answers to it. Yeah, so this is kind of like the conversation around electric cars when they first started to kind of be seen, right? People have lots of opinions. Yes, I want an electric car. I'm all in. Or you had a vast majority of people who are like, I don't know. And you still have people who are like, I'm never driving one. Well, we know that from a government perspective, they're going to mandate certain change. And that's going to happen in the housing industry as well. As most people know, in BC, we've got our step code. We're kind of laddering up over time. The government has said by 2032, we will be at step code 5, which is, for all intents and purposes, passive house standards, right? So we're all dealing in that high performance building range at step code 5. So on one hand, whether you like it or not, that's where we're going. So you can go along kicking and screaming, or you can embrace it and go along. From a real estate investing perspective and from, you know, a transactional perspective, what I think is one of the pieces that's missing is that the marketplace hasn't priced in a value associated with high performance construction. So the general public mm-hmm. does not recognize this high performance model yet, and therefore we can't rationalize. The average person has a very tricky time rationalizing, making these choices, because they won't be able to get their money out right now. I do see that shifting over time as, you know, inspection reports are going to say this home is solid in these regards, but are missing these components. And those are going to be pieces of the puzzle that buyers are going to want. And when that happens, we're going to see an escalation in how people are building. So we've got this government piece that's pushing it to a certain degree. You've got early adopters who are pushing it. And then we really are waiting for the cost to come down. And it is. It's coming down so much faster. Even from 4 years ago when I started building, this education, like time is such a critical element in terms of cost. And as people are learning how to do these things, they take time. They take more time. And so therefore it's more costly. But as more and more contractors and sub-trades are learning how to specifically air seal a home, for example, it becomes way faster. Products come out way faster. Education is more readily available, et cetera. So yeah, there's resistance, mostly from an economic standpoint, for sure. But, you know, this is where we're going. And, you know, I'm kind of all in on it. So, you know, I'm going to say that I think we're headed in the right direction.
So Todd, one of the reasons we love having you on the program also, though, is because you're obviously local, you live in Vancouver, but you know the region really well. Can you talk a little bit, like, what's your take on the market right now in Vancouver real estate?
You know, I think at every moment in time, we tend to have a different perspective where we are in our own lives, kind of what we're exposed to. And that gives us a different kind of angle on the market. We should say that it's October of 2024 because this market seems to change daily. Well, there's so much going on right now. I still think that generally speaking, people are holding their breath a little bit, still kind of on the pause button. There's not a lot of aggression out there in the market. I've definitely pivoted my kind of frontline experience from maybe the more frontline buying and selling in terms of individual people to having a little bit more exposure to the investor side and some of the multifamily elements and what's happening kind of in the developer realm. And I don't know.
Sorry, Todd, why can you talk a little bit about that? Is that just like where you are in your life or the opportunity, or is it something's changed in the marketplace? Why did you move away from that kind of mom and pop investor to investor?
Yeah. You mean much scarier investor? I think it's just a natural evolution of things. I'd spent so many years since I was in my early 20s buying and selling real estate and renovating real estate in Greater Vancouver. And, you know, I've always had a fascination with how the system works and where different opportunities lie. I think one of the things that opened up my horizons was this idea around partnership. So in my earlier years, I was very stubborn about investing independently, kind of doing everything myself, partnering with the bank, I guess. But as time went on, and I would say over the last kind of 5 years, specifically would be reaching out to other kind of like-minded people, getting groups together to look at opportunities that might push us into realms that we are learning more about, but also just expand our financial ability to take on larger projects in conjunction with the fact that, you know, I'd built up a portfolio of properties in Vancouver, and I've started to look at ways to maybe scale back a little bit. And part of that process for me is not ever having to rush. So charting out a journey that might look 5, 10, 15 years down the road, but if you don't plant those seeds now, the opportunity to kind of get highest and best use out of a property that's been rezoned takes time. You know, we're looking at understanding the ever-evolving landscape at the city of Vancouver, which is, my goodness, every time you go down that rabbit hole, no matter who you're talking to, it gets very complicated very quickly. And then you've got to develop some sort of concept and proposal, working with an architectural team, et cetera, bring it back to the city. You know, so looking at this multifamily piece has been really interesting. That has been, we've got a number of projects on the table in that realm, but also getting interested in purpose-built rental. So we've got a few projects that we think might be a really good fit in that realm as well. So, you know, we've strayed from what I think is happening into the market. And maybe that's where I kind of subconsciously feel that the market is going. And therefore, that's kind of where I'm pointed towards.
And geographically, where are you excited about in Metro Vancouver right now?
Well, I've always been a big believer and proponent of East Vancouver. I think East Van is positioned geographically exceptionally well. I think the vibe in East Vancouver is really attractive to so many people. I think the family element of it, proximity to downtown. I won't say that there's unexplored areas because I think most of the things in Greater Vancouver have been revealed, shall we say, but I do think that there's definitely pockets that are still in transition. But, you know, I'm building on Oxford Street in Vancouver near the P&E, and I would say that there's, you know, 20 single family lots around me that are being built at the exact same time and lapping me, I should say. But, you know, most of it transitioning to multifamily on there, whether it's fourplex, six, duplex, those types of things. So, I mean, the rarity of the single family detached home is definitely the headline right now.
Yeah, I feel like we had, it was years ago, Nathan Lauster from UBC was on the show with his book, The Death of the Single Family Home, like literally a decade ago, nearly. And it seemed fairly novel at the time.
It's so,
but now it's pretty, in East Van, it's like you can't go a block without going, oh, another one bites the dust. You know, it's disappearing.
Like, yeah, again, whatever your personal opinion is on how you think we should create community is kind of a separate conversation. But if you look, if you scope back and you look at the big picture at some other really established cities, whether it be New York or London or Paris or whatever these places are, the idea of having this 33x122 lot within 5-10 minutes of the downtown core of a city is asinine. Like, it's not good use of space. We need to densify. How we do that is a very interesting question that should be thought through very carefully. And I don't think Vancouver's got the model right necessarily. I mean, we went all in on the high rise, and now it seems we're pushing all in on, you know, the fourplex or sixplex. So I think it's maybe the path of least resistance to densification seems to be our model here. I think that there's more creative ideas that we could implement that would make this city even better. But we're headed there, and we should be.
Maybe just pulling back, what about BC in general, Todd? Where do you like in BC? It doesn't have to be where to buy, but...
Some of your listeners, I'm sure, have pivoted. Well, I don't even know if Ozzy's doing his thing. I'm sure it's still great.
He's
definitely sending out the emails.
Buy real estate, buy waterfront, anywhere, anytime. That's his great quote.
He also has a very eclectic taste in music, but that's where I get my music.
Okay, great. Real estate investing and music go hand in hand. I still think that there's a big push from our demographic, let's say kind of 40s, 50s, families that are kind of like mid child raising era, which I'm guessing is going to be maybe the bread and butter of your audience. I would say, this doesn't answer your question. Well, I'll get into some areas that I like, but there is this undercurrent of energy that is questioning why they're living in the city of Vancouver at the cost. And I think it's an interesting vibe to acknowledge. Not necessarily because it's going to undermine your investment strategy or any of those kinds of things. I mean, I still think all of those things are strong. But I do think we've got a serious issue where lots of people are thinking about a move. And myself included. And I'm a diehard Vancouverite. I never thought I would have that conversation. But almost every time friends get together now, it creeps into the conversation. I think some of these elements are the interesting things to acknowledge and be aware of if you're thinking with your investor hat on. So number one, it has an implication on who's buying and who's living in Vancouver, surrounding area. But more importantly, where are these people going to go if they choose to leave? And I think a lot of it is really centered around health and lifestyle. So there's this grind element that people have. And maybe this is just a function of age. I don't know. Maybe because, you know, we're kind of all the same age. I'm probably older than both of you guys. But, you know, there's this time in your life where you start to go, okay, we got a little bit of time left. Where are we going to stay? Where are we going to live this out? Travel, et cetera. So I do think that, you know, Vancouver Island, the Okanagan is still a hotspot, no pun intended, for a lot of people. I think when it comes to the Okanagan, I think Penticton and Vernon are really interesting places to look. Penticton particularly, I have a soft spot for that town. I think it's a really interesting mix of kind of old and some new development coming in. The young staff in the city there are very progressive, but very thoughtful. I was up there at some meetings, and they're looking at some real interesting development in that town. And from a lifestyle perspective, it's pretty great as well. Vancouver Island, you know, up island a little bit, Campbell River area, very cool spots. You know, the moment you get over there and you kind of take a deep breath and you kind of like relax a little bit, I think that is where our demographic is looking to live. And I think they're looking for land too, like a little bit more kind of autonomy in their life, whether it means planting a big old garden or it just means like kind of space to stretch out, not necessarily space in the house. I don't think it's like, oh, we need a bigger house. I think that conversation, thankfully, seems to kind of died out a little bit. It's just such a weird old model of thinking. But space in terms of land, I think it's people got a big appetite for.
So that, I actually think that the undercurrent that you kind of highlighted of people talking about leaving the region, I feel like that used to be something that every once in a while in the Georgia Strait, you'd get like a love letter to Vancouver and somebody who, you know, didn't have
desperately to didn't want to on
would be leaving or whatever. But now I feel like that is a conversation at almost every dinner party. Like people think like exploring options, right? And whether it's like on the island or Calgary yeah. or wherever, right? But I think that's a very important thing to think about as a real estate investor and as the trends kind of continue out kind of throughout Western Canada. That's a great one to highlight. We've been asking this question recently. I don't know if you have an answer for it, but in real estate, the saying is buy the rumor, sell the news. Any rumors you're monitoring?
I think that what we were just talking about qualifies as kind of this undertone yeah. of rumor.
Yeah, it's funny that I said to somebody else, but it's interesting that you kind of captured it, right? Because it's like, once you said it, I was like, yeah, you're right. But I'd never actually put that into words. So yeah, I think that is, right? That's the rumor right there.
Here's another one for you. I think it resonates with a lot of people when I share it, is I got really inspired by the Blue Zone documentary on Netflix. And in episode one, they talk about this concept of Mauai in Okinawa. And basically, you know, people can go and watch it, but basically it's about kind of creating community. And I'm obsessed with this idea of curating my neighbors and creating the space that we might live in once our kids leave home. And we have been on a semi-aggressive search by plane, by boat, by car to look for property that might accommodate multiple buildings that we might be able to bring some hand-picked people together. Not necessarily like kind of commune style. Everyone still has, it maybe has a much more kind of business structure behind it, but allows us to kind of overlap some things that seem silly to do independently on an ongoing basis when you're living in your own house by yourself. So we've been looking at different zoning around the province and different tracts of land that might accommodate this. I think zoning is a real big problem to allow some of these types of things, which I think are hugely positive. But yeah, that's what we're exploring. So there's like a uber grassroots rumor of where, you know, some of the 50 somethings are focused.
That's interesting. Cool. That's have you been to Southlands yet?
The development in Tawasin?
Yeah. It's super cool. They're calling it like I forget what it is. The new urbanism or something. There's a tagline that's kind of...
Oh, no. Isn't it have something that's a farm?
Yeah.
Yeah, agricultural urbanism. Sorry. Yeah, that's what it's called.
So, a similar model in a way. I was exposed to that project when they were first kind of getting it going years ago. I haven't been out there to see it in real life, but I'd say a much more personal version. And,
Yeah, you can't choose your neighbors
there. Yeah, you can't choose your neighbors there unless you buy the whole damn thing. Right. Which you guys can probably do. I mean, I'm just waiting for the invite.
We don't have that Todd Talbot money. Okay, what? Todd, maybe we've kept you for an hour. We've got a segment called The Five Wire that we end every show with. Five lighthearted questions. Can you stick around for those?
I'll do my best.
This podcast is brought to you by Spark, the new development sales and marketing platform.
Adam, the stakes have never been higher for launching a condo project, and today's developers and brokerage teams need to leverage the best tools in order to hit their financing thresholds and to sell out their projects.
Spark is an all-in-one sales and marketing software that includes a comprehensive CRM, inventory management, email marketing, and digital contracts. These tools are custom tailored to the pre-sale process to help you capture leads, increase inventory yield, and transact contracts seamlessly.
And here's the best part, Adam. Spark's team is headquartered right here in Yale Town, and they have over 10 years of experience in helping BC-based developers and brokers bring their projects to market.
So if you're selling a new development, you need to check out Spark at spark.re/VREP. That's spark.re/VREP. And remember, Matt, you can't light the pre-sale world on fire without a spark. Number one is one book that you've read recently that you would recommend for our listeners.
Fire Weather by, I'm blanking on his name. Fire Weather. It's a book that dissects the fire in Fort McMurray and talks about why wildfires are different now than they were in the past. It's a fascinating read.
Awesome.
What is, this is actually one that I think is a great question for you. What is one new belief, behavior, or habit that you've taken on that has improved your life in a meaningful way?
Well, I chose to become vegetarian about a year ago. And so I've been exploring that. And it's really just personal, you know, from a climate perspective, just to kind of downgrade my carbon impact. From a health perspective, I think maybe I eat more bread and I've got more of a dad bod going on at the moment. I don't know. It makes me feel much more kind of present and in line with what I believe in. So
nice. Question number three, what have you been binge watching lately or a movie recommendation?
Oh my goodness. Oh, well, we just got back from Toronto. I watched Ferrari on the plane and it was, it's heavy duty, but it's really well done. There was a quote in there from Enzo Ferrari, which I integrated into the talk that I did at the home show in Toronto, which was things that are built well tend to be more pleasing to the eye. I thought that was an interesting layered comment. Obviously, he was talking about his cars, but I thought it was a really interesting comment around how we build our homes. Is oftentimes you walk in, you're like, on paper, this thing should be, I should be loving this. And there's something wrong with it, but you can't put your finger on it. And oftentimes it's a function of quality. And so, yeah.
Great one.
That is a great one. And just,
it's a misquote, by the way. It was a paraphrase. I can't exactly remember.
No, I just was thinking in terms of binge watching, just to return to the documentary. So is two questions. One is, can you say the date again that so it's 8 parts. And it's like an hour. Is it
it's
an eight,
30
hours?
30-minute episodes, 8 parts. It airs October 8th on Cottage Life in Canada. I think they're going to air episode 1 and 2 back to back on the first night. And then weekly, I believe that's Tuesday night at 8 o'clock for the next 6 weeks. So yeah, an 8-part documentary series on Cottage Life. Check your, you know, your cable provider, TELUS, Bell, Shaw, whatever. It's available on all of those. And yeah, I mean, it will expand out from there over time, but in terms of digital. So you can't binge it per se. You know, I do invite everyone to go and watch it. I've never been as kind of personally connected to a project as this one. I'm really proud of it. You know, you guys have talked to me a lot of times. I don't often say that about many things that I'm doing, whether it's on TV or off, but this one I am. It's I feel like we captured a real authentic journey, and I think that there's lots of interesting things in there. It's entertaining too, but you know, I think there's lots of interesting things for people to get from watching the show.
Matt just made a brilliant segue in question 3.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say
still
now,
two
Adam.
Questions left.
Adam,
what
line up. Right, what is right,
last
the music
two questions
you've been listening
quickly.
To?
Favorite band or music?
Oh my god, you guys always ask me this.
Is like, the next one we podcast? Went out on the
now.
Poignant
it feels
ending.
Jarring right now. What's that?
Is the next one favorite podcast?
No. But
okay, so I'm going to answer this one with a podcast because I listen to talk radio and podcasts. I barely listen to music. I'm obsessed with you know, the new version of talk radio. And basically, my favorite podcast, other than Vancouver Real Estate Podcast, of course, is Armchair Expert Dax Shepard. I love it.
That's a great show. Yeah. I like his the co-host too. She's awesome.
Yeah, Monica.
Monica, thank you.
Yeah.
And his wife is...
Kristen Bell.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I
anyone I've with kids knows, you know, Frozen. She's the woman right. From Frozen, along with 1,000 other things. In fact, I was watching her new show last night. She's got a new show.
So my wife's watching this now.
Yeah.
What's it called?
Oh, God, why are you asking me this?
It's like based in L.A. and she's dating a guy who's a rabbi.
That's right. Yeah.
Name escapes me.
And name escapes me too. Come on.
Yeah.
We've done pretty
last
well.
Last question. Okay. Last question, Todd. Something that you've purchased for under $1,500 that's had a positive impact on your life.
Oh my God. Under $1,500. Here's something that I purchased that is like a little tripod for my phone. So we can easily video our build here because I'm doing this one super grassrootsy. And one more shameless plug. So we're doing a YouTube series of this Passive House retrofit because doing one on network television takes years and we didn't want to wait that long. So we just thought for this one, my wife and I are doing it. We're just sharing the whole journey on YouTube. It's at Talbot Life, but you can't do that without a little tripod. Or else you spend a lot of money on videographers.
Right. So Todd, if people want to follow along, what's the best way to see what you're up to?
Probably Instagram at Todd Talbot, and then pop over to YouTube as well. We've got our channel, which is called at Talbot Life. And then this show for this renovation is Adventures in Real Estate.
Nice. Well, thanks again for taking the time today.
Thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
So there you have, folks, our discussion with former host of Love It or List It and all-around good guy, neighborhood friend, Todd Talbot.
It was weird not having Todd in the studio because usually it's like I used to look forward to having him on because he'd come in, he'd hang out, we'd chat beforehand. I think last time we went for lunch.
He'd bring so much energy to the room. You're like, wow, this is astounding.
Hang out for three hours. Both of us take off for a nap. Todd goes and does that seven times over. You know,
exactly. But you know, the one thing I just wanted to say is I am actually really looking forward to watching this docuseries. I feel like it, I was thinking about it after, it encapsulates, and I remember when his house, the A-frame, burnt down. And it was so sad and tragic. But it's amazing to think that this story essentially encompasses all the challenges of trying to implement those new technologies, mitigate against the risks, which Todd says it's amazing how many times he talks about how, you know, fire's not going to impact because they're taking all sorts of steps. And then, you know, with climate change and global warming, it's just, you know, we just don't have the control. And it seems like it's going to be an amazing thing to watch. And I feel like it might have international legs, honestly. I would imagine this is a story that will resonate with a lot of people around the world.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it's interesting because I was gutted when you know, everybody was watching that kind of unfold on Todd's Instagram and he was on the site. And I remember it was like watching it from when they were concerned about being in kind of the line of the fires and then watching it when it actually happened. Because usually, I mean, thank God, the story for a lot of people is, oh, this smoke, the fire might come, but, you know, you might have to go It's so close, but usually, you know, fingers crossed, most people get out okay with their home and their belongings. But in this case, it was so tragic watching it. And then on top of that, you know, you hear about all these preventative measures with building materials, but then you hear about just how hot it is in the center of these fires and you know, it's like your home just is incinerated. And when I remember Todd kind of filming the aftermath and walking around the site. And it was like, you know, based on the video he was taking, like, it looks like there are like, he didn't find almost any remnants of this, of this structure. Right. So it's incredible just to realize how terrifying and how destructive these fires really can be.
No, and not to mention insurance and everything else. So anyway, hopefully everyone tunes in. I think it's going to be, by the sounds of things, a very important documentary and an entertaining one. Todd's always entertaining, so it should be fun to watch. What else do we have before we cut for the day, Adam? We have, now I'm just getting word about this, the Elevate Conference. Is that what it's called? Conference?
Elevate Summit, I think. It's November 4th. So I'm not even really sure. I should probably find out exactly what we're covering here. But Steve Soretsky, Jay McInnes, Hussan Juma, who's great on Instagram, and myself will be talking on November 4th at the Vancouver Club. This is the Elevate Summit. It's directed, I believe, at agents, but it's and it's
what put is
on
the
by
what is the what is the talk. What is the
talk is on, it's a social media panel. So, I mean, I'll be talking about, I guess, the podcast and the origin story 10 years ago, if I can remember. I can't remember what I had for breakfast yesterday, but I'll do my best, man.
This sounds amazing. I'm very excited. those are some big names. That's impressive.
It'll be fun regardless. I don't know. Who knows if they'll call on me. But Morgan Brown will be interviewing. So she's always great.
Ooh. Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Speaking of bringing the energy, what else do we have for the day, Adam? We have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is our website where all things real estate related live. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com for things like the LiveWire. This is our weekly mailer with stats. The September stats just came out. We didn't even talk about them. not much to talk about, not much change, not a lot of excitement in those stats. But if you want a copy of those, head over to the LiveWire. We also send out, of course, sales ratios. So if you want to dig into price bands or neighborhoods and see how those sub-markets, those micro-markets are doing, those go out every month as well. We have deal of the month. We have VIP access to pre-sales. You know, there's no reason why you shouldn't be on the LiveWire. We also, of course, have tried and true private client services.
Yeah, Matt. And if you are not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information for free. It's available at your fingertips over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is the best way to monitor the market. And right now, you know, I feel like a broken record, but honestly, every week I'm grateful for services like PCS because it helps me keep track about what's going on in the various neighborhoods that I'm constantly monitoring personally. And then it helps our clients monitor in the same manner, which is fantastic. And really, and getting the sold prices, finding out if there's price changes, it's alerting you to everything. So, I mean, what I do and what I think a lot of listeners can do is I've basically got a 3 kilometer radius around my property that I monitor, or a couple kilometers, I should say. And I've just basically drawn a circle generally in the vicinity, so I know what my neighbors are selling for. And so when something comes up in my neighborhood, I know exactly when it was listed, what it was listed for, and then eventually what it sells for.
It's a fantastic research tool. That's at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. If you want to talk about that or anything else, give me a shout at 778-847-2854 or Matt@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or Adam@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
And of course, we got that Kokomo line info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Well, have a great week, everybody. And we're back next week with another fantastic episode.
Ooh, we're talking elections next week.
Oh, can't
Don't
wait.
Don't miss it. Don't miss it.
2,000 Spaces for Radio. Subscribe today.